welcome everybody to Country Joe's Chicken Show. And I am Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com. And with us, of course, is Country Joe himself.
Yeah, and I love our new intro. That's really something. It's the first time I've heard it. I just love it. A lot better than the old one, I might say.
Well, this is way more chickenful, and of course, for Country Joe's Chicken Show, that's what we need to have.
Uh-huh.
Our first guest today we have with us is Bill Wolf, who was the longtime owner of the Poultry Press, although now his daughter owns it, but I know his brain is still full of poultry things to talk about.
Sure, sure.
Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Now, I know you guys have been, the Poultry Press has been printing for 100 years now, is that right?
That is true. It started in December of 1914.
Wow, that's amazing.
Jeez. And I bet a lot of things have changed since then. When it first started out, did you have a lot of advertisers? Or not that you were around then, but I'm sure you've seen the original issues.
When it started out, it belonged to a family by the last name of Delancey from York, Pennsylvania, and it belonged to a grandfather, then a father, then a son, and that's who we purchased from when he decided to retire in 1986.
Now, how has the paper changed from way back in 1914 to now? Has there been a lot of changes, or is it pretty much the same?
The layout and format is basically the same from the way that when we took it over. And the only thing is that, you know, it's all run by offset printing. And it's, you know, the number of pages from previously when we took it over is more than what there was when the Delanceys had it. But, I mean, it's just the fact that we attended a lot of shows and traveled throughout all different parts of the country.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So when it first started out, it pretty much looked the same way it does today, except smaller. The format, and it's black and white and the whole thing. Did you have any plans on going color or doing anything different, or is it you're going to just hold it the same format?
We go color every so often. It depends. There's once in a while people, advertisers will want a full page of color. Then what we do is go 50-50 with them on the color because it's so expensive to print color.
Right.
And whenever we get that opportunity, then what we normally do is put some colored pictures of the poultry that is on the front pages of either section.
Yeah, and of course, everybody wants to see the glamour shots of the birds in color.
Right, that won the trophies, right. Yeah.
Now, what's your favorite section of the Poultry Press? I know you have listings of shows and upcoming shows. Do you want to describe it to listeners who may have never seen it yet?
It's a it has to do with entirely of exhibition poultry, and there's advertisers that run on pages 2, 3, 5, and then 4 pages on the center spread of the first section. And then the back part is back pages. They're yearly advertisers on all them pages. And then throughout the paper, starting on page 6 through sometimes 14, 15, we have listings of shows throughout the different parts of the country. The shows advertising when their shows is going to be to encourage the exhibition people to come and show their birds with them.
Then, why don't you tell the people how to get this paper? The people that are hearing this for the first time that might be interested.
It is, you can send it to, you can either do it through email or paper or mailing, I'm sorry. And you can mail it to Poultry Press.
We call that snail mail, but I suppose with a Poultry Press, the chickens would just eat the snails, so we ought to just call it paper mail.
There you go. But you can send it in care of Poultry Press at Post Office Box 542, and that's Connersville with the ERS, Indiana 47331-0542. It is $26 a year. It comes out once a month. It's mailed the last Thursday of each month, or you can go to the website www.faultypress.com.
Now, is it something that, are there more shows in like the summer months, or are there actually shows around the country all year round? I mean, you're in Indiana, I'm in Massachusetts, but Joe's in Florida, where the weather is more conducive, shall we say.
Okay, the shows start usually in the fall for the exhibition shows. They usually start, they start on the Labor Day weekend and run through. I've still got two more shows to go this spring. One I'm going to this weekend will be at Canfield, Ohio. Then the following weekend I'll be in Bloomington, Illinois. I just come back from Galesville, Wisconsin this past weekend covering the shows. And they go from the like Labor Day weekend through about the third weekend of June. And then the county fairs start along with state fairs. Your birds are in better shape most of the time through the fall and early spring shows.
That's what I was going to ask. Are birds, you know, do they have to be a certain age to compete and to look their best? And is there a certain age that after that they just don't look as good anymore and can't compete?
Most of the bantams will mature anywhere from 5 to 7 to 8 months, where the large fowl birds take anywhere from about 8 months to 12 months to mature. And so the bigger the birds, the longer it takes them to mature.
Now, do you show birds yourself? Do you raise any particular breeds yourself to show?
We raise and show Old English Game Bantams.
Oh, okay.
And so that's, I've had them, and this is my 50th year showing exhibition poultry. I started out with 4-H and went into exhibition poultry, started in 1965.
Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
Wow. Now, have you been showing the same type of chicken, the same breed of chicken all that time?
Yes. That's what I've basically specialized in. I have raised quite a few of all the different kinds of breeds of chickens, and I've raised a lot of some of the large fowl, try to work with different things. And when people say you can't do this, you can't do that, that just gives me a burr up my tail end to show them that you can do it. And so as I tell people, you can take any breed of chicken, any variety of it, other breed, and you can make it a champion. If you want to work at it hard enough and put the energy and time into it in a breeding program to take it to become a champion. But it just takes
amazing.
A lot of hard work and dedication.
Now the ones, I'm sorry, what was the breed again that you're working with now?
I still work with Old English Game Bantams. Always been one of my favorite breeds that I started with, and that's what I continue to breed. And I'll venture out to other things, but right now we got just the Old English Game Bantams, and my granddaughter shows some modern bantams and some bantam call ducks, or bantam ducks that are small.
Now, are they, when other people aren't breeding them for show, are they tend to be game birds or layers, or what is their purpose besides being beautiful, of course, because you've bred them and we know they're stunning?
Well, most people, if you raise the big large fowl, a lot of them are dual purpose, where you can raise them not only for exhibition eggs, and the ones that aren't good enough to take to shows, you can also eat them. They got a multi purpose on them. The bantams, there's nothing too much there that you can eat, and they don't lay large numbers of eggs like the bigger birds do. So it's basically just a short breeding season on them.
Mm-hmm. So about how many shows do you do a year, do you think, for the paper and yourself?
If I go to the shows, it's for the paper and for showing. There's sometimes when if we fly to shows, I've attended as many as 40-some shows a year.
Amazing. Wow.
Well, you know, I'm going to cut you off there. We are just about out of time for this segment. Will you stick with us?
I will.
Excellent, because I know Joe and I both have a lot of questions for you. And, you know, that's why we get these experts on here, because there are certainly things that I don't know, but there are things that even Joe himself, Country Joe's chicken Joe himself, doesn't know.
I learn all the time.
Well, you know, my great-great aunt Flora told me that the day you stop learning is the day you die. So
that's it.
And she lived to be 104. So I think we have a good precedent for that. And she wasn't down in Florida with you, you know, in the Sunshine State either. She was up here in New England where the winters are hard, but some of the old Yankees are even harder.
Wow.
Folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show. Country Joe's Chicken Show here on not only countryjoeschickenshow.com, but on BBS Radio every other Monday from 4 to 5 Eastern Time. Wherever you are in the country, I'm sure you're used to adjusting your time zones because it's recorded out in California. Yeah. So, Joe, we were talking about exhibition poultry, and I know you had more you wanted to talk with Bill about.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was just interested in the show circuit or how that works. And he kind of told me he did 40-something shows a year. And I'm sure there's a lot more shows. I know down here in Florida, I see them advertised in the poultry press and like California and whatnot. But, I mean, I was just wondering, do you know roughly how many shows there are nationwide? It's got to be into the hundreds and hundreds, I'm sure, right?
I would say there's probably somewhere between 200 and 300 shows throughout the country.
That's what I figured. I figured there had to be that much. Now, does it come down to like a national championship, you know, to like one thing, you know, like the dog shows, how it comes into New York, you know, for the grand
for best
deal?
In show.
Yeah, the best in show. Does it come down to that at all?
They have there's two organizations, the American Bantam Association and American Poultry Association. American Bantam Association is strictly for all bantams, which has six classifications of bantam chickens and one for bantam ducks, where the American Poultry Association has the six bantam chicken classifications, three geese classifications, three large duck classifications, bantam duck, and then six classes of large fowl chickens. And then they have national meets every year. This year, the American Bantam Association will be holding its 100th anniversary meet at Columbus, Ohio on November 7th, 8th, and 9th at Columbus, Ohio at the State Fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. And the American Poultry Association will be held with the Tennessee Valley Poultry Association at Knoxville, Kentucky on the first weekend of December.
Now, you said earlier that when you believe that, you know, any breed of poultry can be a champion show bird if you work hard enough at it. When you're getting ready for a show, do you have to, I don't know, bathe and blow dry the chicken like they do with some dogs?
You might laugh, but they do that, especially with a lot of the birds, especially a white bird compared to a colored bird, which may be black or party color, which is more than one color, and they do wash them to get them and clean and everything. And then you'll see the exhibitors at the show working on cleaning up their feet, their toenails, trimming their toenails, their beaks, and everything like that when they get them at the show, so they can be in show shape to give them their best opportunity to win.
Now, are there any sort of, not cheats, but things that people do to, you know, add a little red to the comb or a little powder? I know some show dogs, some of the white dogs, you know, sometimes people add a little powder into the coat so it looks even puffier and whiter. Do people do that with chickens, or is it not as competitive, shall we say?
Oh, no, it's very, very competitive, highly competitive, because people, everybody, when they leave to go to a national meet or any show, if you got a competitive edge to you, you are going to try to do your best to have your birds in the best of shape to win a show. And, you know, it's just like a lot of the white birds, when they wash them, at the very end, they'll put a little bluing in the water. And I mean very little. Otherwise, you will turn a white bird into green or blue.
So I'm like the old ladies we used to know who did that with their hair.
And they use that, too, on some of the birds, on the white birds, to try to get it that to get that coloring in there to make them white birds really sparkle.
So you know, it's funny. Today's... Actually, I do this show, but I also do a website called petoftheday.com, and we actually have a chicken today who is pet of the day, and she is a silky chicken, and she is very white and very puffy, and her person, and her name is Poof, by the way, so, and nobody ever has to ask how she got her name. Now, are silkies a breed that competes a lot?
Yes. Down at, I was at a show a couple weekends ago down at Lucasville, Ohio, with the Southern Ohio Poultry Association, and the super grand champion of the show was a bearded white silky hen. So they do win. They win shows.
Well, this one walks on her leash and harness and likes visiting people, and she actually has another hen, a New Hampshire Red, that's there to lay the eggs. So Molly, the New Hampshire Red, pays the rent, and the silky is just kind of there to be beautiful.
Now, how about turkeys and ducks? I noticed there's some of that in there. Is that a popular thing to show?
Yes, it is. And I was at a show. Let me think where it was at. I think it was at Uniontown, Pennsylvania, back in April. And the super grand champion of the show was a Narragansett turkey.
Oh.
And we had a joint national with the American Bantam Association, American Poultry Association, at our show in Indiana. It was called the Crossroads of America Poultry Club. We put it on just twice. We got groups of people to work together towards it. And the first show that won was a goose. And the second one was a duck. So it was a Muscovy duck.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's not all chickens. I like
that. Yeah.
It's funny, Joe, I know you said when you raise turkeys for the fall that often people want the small ones. So do you raise Bantam turkeys? Is there such a thing?
Yeah,
it's called Beltsville White small turkeys. They're a little bit on the smaller side, but then, you know, they don't compare to the broad-breasted whites and stuff like that, or the Narragansetts, but they are smaller turkeys.
Yeah, I've had people ask me to just raise those for them. I haven't. I just raised the big ones. But, I've seen those turkeys. It's really, you know, it's really funny, you know, to see them. They're like midget turkeys.
Well, I know that a lot of people, especially now where, you know, families will be spread all over the country, when they have a holiday meal, they might only have four or five people in the room. So I can understand, you know, wanting a smaller turkey then.
Yeah, like a 10 or 12 pound turkey. Yeah, that's the whole goal down here, especially down here. A lot of senior citizens that live alone, and they want those smaller turkeys. But that's the only small turkey breed that I've ever run across or been, you know, asked to breed. That's interesting. So I guess it's not a Bantam turkey, but I guess it's a small turkey.
It would be known as a Bantam turkey in that category, yes, because of being smaller.
Right.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask, you know, what makes something a Bantam as opposed to just a small of a normal breed, but we are running out of time for this segment, so I will save that question for next segment. Bill, will you stick with us for one more?
Sure.
All right, folks. We'll be right back. Uh-oh! welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now, we were just talking about Bantam turkeys, but, you know, this is, it's called Country Joe's Chicken Show, but we do discuss other kinds of poultry, right, Joe?
Yeah, every kind, yeah. And one of the other questions I had, is there such a thing as Bantam geese? I was curious about that. There's Bantam everything out. Hello?
The red-breasted geese. They're not for exhibition, but there's some real small geese that are called red-breasted, and they're very, very expensive. They'll usually run somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 for a breeding pair.
Oh, my God. I've never seen any. I've never heard of them
until
now.
And that's probably why. Now,
yeah.
Bantam ducks, you said, is it your granddaughter who shows Bantam ducks?
Yes, ma'am. She does show Bantam ducks, and they're just miniature ducks that are bred for... The Bantam thing is, all it is a miniature, mostly, of the bigger variety of birds, where they call the large fowl, and the Bantams are just a miniature of the large fowl. There's some breeds, that, like Leghorns, that have both large fowl and Bantams, same way with Rhode Island Reds. So there's large fowl and Bantams. They're just the miniature of the large fowl.
And is there a certain, like, it has to only get to so many inches before it can be classified as a Bantam? Because I know, like, some breeds, dog shows are what most people are familiar with, and poodles, there's the toy poodle, the miniature poodle, and the standard poodle, and it depends on how big the dog gets what it counts as. Is there something like that for Bantam? Can only be a certain height, or is that just vary breed to breed?
They're just not by the height. They go mostly by weight, like a old English game Bantam. Older male bird, a cock bird, will go 24 to 26 ounces, where the hen and cockerel will go 22 ounces, and the poult will be 22 or 20 ounces. They go by weight, where like a Cochin Bantam will go up to like 40 ounces. I mean, it just depends on, it goes by weight and size.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Oh, okay. Not height,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Not so much height, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, uh-huh. When I know that some of the breeds, I can't believe how much you said those Bantam geese were. That was astounding. Have you ever seen one?
Some of the red-breasted geese?
Yeah. Yes,
my daughter, she had a pair of them. We lost a female, so we have a male here. But she has them. She likes a lot of the exotic animals also to go with exhibition poultry.
Now, what makes them so expensive? Is it because they're rare, or is that the deal?
They're rare, and, you know, they're hard to raise. They'll only raise, like, a clutch a year most of the time. I think they only lay around 4 eggs and hatch them. There's a lot of the swans, it's the same way. They only lay so many eggs a year. So, you know, it's just like this year, everybody's had trouble trying to get the waterfowl hatched out, the ducks and the geese. I know I talked to a couple of the guys this weekend up there at the Wisconsin show, and they was talking about how hard it was to try to hatch geese because of the extreme cold weather that every part of the country had this year.
Yeah. Amazing. Wow.
I was going to ask about that. And do things like rain and stuff like that matter, or is it just because the winter was so cold and it was extraordinarily long this year, too?
Yeah, it's just the extreme cold. Most of the birds, they can take the cold. They have real troubles with the wind. And I mean, we had a lot of wind this past winter, and I mean, we were still in the minus zero in April. And you know, when you take that kind of weather, I put plastic around all my buildings to ward off the wind, but just try to keep the cold. Most of the time, they can take the cold as long as they don't get hit by that wind. And it's the same way with animals out in the wild.
And you know, that makes sense. If it's minus something out there when it's spring, you're not going to want to raise a chick in that weather. So I can see not laying your egg.
Yeah, I can too. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I'm just flabbergasted over those geese. I've never heard of them. And the price, you know, I'm going, wow. There's
Now, do all geese need water?
Yes, they got it. There's a lot of them that you got to have plenty of water for them. Some of them, they get in there to swim, and a lot of the geese and ducks, they do their mating on water. So you got to have, like, pools for them and when they, so they can get on the water to mate. Now, they don't have to, all of them, but some of them, a lot of them will get on water to do their mating, you know, when it comes to the breeding season.
So now we don't have to worry about Joe's wife, doesn't have to worry about him now deciding to get into geese, because she'd notice if he started building a pond in the barn.
No problem. Well, plus the alligators down here. That'd be a smorgasbord for the alligators around here.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's different parts of the country. We can do different things, I guess.
Yeah, that's not now, real down here.
Now, do you notice that different birds do well in different, you know, are certain birds popular, like our Rhode Island Reds and New Hampshire Reds, more popular in New England than they are in, like, Ohio or Tennessee? Or is the regionalism pretty much a thing of the past now?
No, it's still the same way. A lot of birds, a large fowl birds are raised, like you said, out in the New England area. And the upper Midwest and California, there's lots of people that raise a lot of the large fowl. Large fowl have a harder time with hotter weather because of the extreme heat, because the only way a chicken can cool off is by putting their wings out. And if you see them with their wings out, so they can cool their body down. You know,
that's true. Yeah, I see that down here. Matter of fact, every day we see it down here. It's in the 90s. Continually, our nighttime lows are in the mid-70s. So I just walked out to the coop here earlier, and they're all out there, like you say, with their wings out, and they actually pant. You see their beaks open, panting, you know. So I know it's rough on them.
So the large chickens are more like me. They'd rather be here in New England, where we get, like, winter and cool, and when it's 80 degrees, we think it's real hot out.
Right. That is true.
Well, you know, someday, do you have any pictures of your show birds on your website? I know your website is it thepoultrypress.com?
It's info@poultrypress.com. info@poultrypress.com. There's pictures on there that you can go to and download to see some of the pictures. I can't tell you, because I'm a total computer illiterate. My kids do the stuff. They put pictures and stuff on there of the different birds so people can see them, what kind there is. But you can go onto that and download pictures to see what kind there is. And most of them are ones that we have taken at the shows, or people will send in that we put them on there for them.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah.
We are out of time for you for today. But congratulations on 100 years of the Poultry Press, and we
that's
hope
amazing.
You'll
yeah.
come back some other time. That would be a really old chicken, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah, we'll have you back on, talk about the paper again.
Anytime that you want to, all you got to do, is give me an advance notice so that I know.
Okay.
That's right, great. Advance warning. Folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show. Back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now we have Country Joe himself here, and you've been raising chickens for how many years is it now, Joe?
Oh God, I'm going to tell you, better part of 20. It hadn't been all that long, about 20. And I've been experimenting along the way and falling and picking myself up. I've been playing with this new stuff called fodder. Remember we talked about that a while back? where you grow barley seed. And I built a whole room on that. Well, let me tell you about that story. Everybody who ever thought about raising fodder, I got into that, and that's why I wanted to talk to old Craig Russell about all this, because he knows about proteins and stuff. Laying hens need like an 18% protein, and I thought that barley fodder had it, and it didn't, and my egg production almost turned right off. Oh, my God. I guess so, Karen. It was scary. I was a nightmare, because I normally get about 25 dozen eggs a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started feeding fodder, and I noticed it was, going down a little bit, and I thought, wow, it's the Florida heat. And then in about 2 weeks' time, I was down like 4 or 5 dozen a day.
Wow.
25, and
you have people who are expecting your eggs.
Yes. And I mean, it was just crashing, and I was going, oh my God, once you turn the switch off, it's hard to turn it back on. And I, I'm coming back out of this now where we're still playing with proteins. I'm working with a college up in Ithaca, New York. It's called, it sounds funny, Dairy One, what they do is they test all your products and whatnot, and it's Cornell University, and I'm working with a doctor there, and he's helping me, and within a couple of weeks, we're going to know all the proteins, which I should have done, Karen, in the first place, check my proteins before I started feeding all this stuff, but I didn't, and I invested all this money into a building, and all the stuff that goes with it.
And now I know you're probably supplementing, not feeding just the fodder now, because you do need to have your egg production. That's kind of why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. But are there other things you can grow besides barley that will have more protein in them?
Oh, sure. Sunflower. Sunflower is supposed to be the highest protein seed, and it has a very, very high protein. Some of it, I guess, from what I understand, has a protein of 40%. But what I found out, see, of course, we just use trays that are automatically watered every 2 hours for so many minutes, and then the water goes out, and then the seed just grows with no dirt, no fertilizer, no nothing. And it makes it like an organic seed. But what happens, I didn't know until I was talking to Cornell University, is protein. You lose half the protein in water. So if you have something that's 40% protein, by the time you get all done with it, sugared off, they say, up north, you get half of that. So I don't know how this is all going to turn out, but boy, I'll tell you. And then I found out that in the interim, one of the biggest thing is calcium. The chickens need that.
Oh, of course, because you need calcium for shells.
Right. Yeah. So, and that's already was factored in with the grain, where it's not with this. So my chickens went through a calcium, deficiency. So I've had to shovel that to them. So I'm getting that back. But anyways, so that's what I've been doing here, on my experimental part of my farm. But
we have Craig with us now.
Do we? Oh, boy, am I going to blast him.
what am I in trouble for?
Well,
see, Joe got himself in trouble, and he's hoping you can help him out of it.
Okay.
Yes. You remember that fodder deal? Remember I built a whole building? I started feeding barley fodder and whatnot?
Yeah, what traditionally was always called sprouts. Good
right,
feed.
In the old days, right. Well, right. What had happened was, is I didn't have my proteins checked, and I wasn't getting anywhere near the 18% protein that I needed for these chickens, and they just shut down like they went on strike.
and you probably had trouble with calcium.
I did. Yeah. I brought that back, but still, I'm working with, I was just telling Karen, I'm working with Cornell University. They're testing all my fodder now, all my sprouts, and we're blending and whatnot. So I don't have a protein number yet, but I'm working with a doctor up there who's testing this stuff for me, and to get the 18%. But in the interim, like I said, my eggs just went down. I was getting like 25 dozen a day, and I went down to like 4 or 5 dozen. And wow! And the other thing, Craig, he'd told me to do, and I've done it, but I don't know why I'm doing it. It's put liquid vitamin D in the water.
That's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That will help them handle the calcium and so on.
Oh, that's what it's for. It works with the calcium, huh?
Among other things, vitamin D, kind of a sunshine vitamin, it's good for all of us, not just the chickens.
Right.
But it helps them in utilizing the calcium.
Now, I'm wondering, will these chickens all come back to 100%, do you think?
Oh, I think so, sure. You, I don't think you hurt them. You just sort of put them on furlough because they weren't getting the proper nutrients.
Uh-huh. Now, how many weeks do you think that'll take before they get back up there? It's been a couple now, and it's increased, but it's nowhere near it was. You know?
Well, it'll take a while. How long did it take for it to go down?
Oh my God! It took about 2 weeks, and then it just seemed like overnight it crashed.
Yeah.
So, boy, have I got a lesson for anybody that wants to feed fodder. I'll tell you that, boy. Really investigate it because I didn't.
Right.
Shame on me. Shame on me.
Well, and that's why we're doing this radio show, so other people can learn from your mistakes, Joe.
Yeah. There we go.
Well, the sprouts were traditionally fed, and their protein does come up. I'm much higher than raw grain, but it was traditionally fed to give vitamins and greens during the winter when traditional chickens that didn't get the supplements in their feed but were usually on range didn't have that available. And
right.
Now, you, of course, are in Florida, so it's not quite the same thing. But it was usually a seasonal feeding program and quite good. I used sprouts when I was younger. I don't use them regularly now simply because I usually have access to other greens in the winter, and also it's a lot of work.
Yep.
It's not. I used to be younger, and I didn't think I needed to sleep as much, and so on. And growing sprouts was a nice sideline. The chickens appreciated it, and so on. But I try to do it easier now. Although occasionally I'll sprout some barley or some oats, and it's certainly good feed. But I wasn't really surprised when you told me that you were shooting for 18%. I've heard of people getting that. But it certainly goes up from the 10 to 12 you get with the regular grain. But 18 is a high shot, and I would make sure that I was getting that before I went completely to the fodder or sprouts. Although I think you would do well with that as part of your ration if you were feeding an egg pellet or something like that in conjunction with it.
Well, we are out of time for this segment, Craig. We'll be right back with more after this.
Hey, what do you think of that, Craig? Those are all my chickens.
Now, if you could really get your chickens to cluck in a certain key and a certain tune, Joe, then I'd be really impressed.
Ah.
Now, Craig, for those we didn't get a chance to give you your formal introduction.
Yes, that's right.
For people who haven't heard him before, Craig is from the SPPA, which is the
Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. We're the old breeds, people.
Right. Everybody now, in the world who has a chicken knows Craig Russell.
And if they don't, they should. How's that?
Well, they sure do. Everybody I've ever talked to knows them. That's why I always save up all my hard questions just for Craig, because he always has an answer for me that works.
Good.
Now, are the older breeds more, I don't know, would fodder work better for the older breeds? Is that something they're more adaptable to?
I don't think so. Now, we've developed chickens with essentially obese genes to give us a big, meaty chicken early on and this sort of thing. So you can't say all chickens are the same, but essentially they are. And I don't think it would work better for one type of chicken than another, although Joe's on the right track when he's checking just to see what level of protein he's getting with the fodder or sprouts. And depending on what that is, and I would expect it, if not 18%, to be 15 or 16. But depending on what that is, with a little supplement and some careful balancing, I think it'll work well. The problem probably isn't just the protein. His chickens were used to one diet, and he changed the diet. That probably would have worked better if you had phased it in as the fodder is part of the diet and then just increased it. But you're on the right track when you find out what your protein is and maybe what you can do to increase it. One thing that put me off about the term fodder is I don't know how long you're growing it and how green you're getting it and that kind of thing, but as I recall from talking to different people about this, sprouts, once they just are actively sprouting maybe an inch or so long, that's where you have the maximum protein, and eventually it'll start to decline as you get more green stuff and are going more to starch than you are to protein. So you may find that you have to feed it at a different stage, or you need to supplement it to some extent. But I think the program can work for you. It certainly works for a lot of people. Part of the thing, and you have less problem with this than we Northerners do, is it's not just... Several things led to the increase in egg production, selective breeding, particularly with trap nesting and so on. Selective breeding, improved diet, and day length control. Those are the primary things that led to the fairly dramatic increase in egg production, although some of the old-timers... I remember being at the York Poultry Show when I was a teenager, and Vic Corson had been reading a book, and he said to the assembled group, which included John Kreiner and Bruce Lentz and Dale Rice, and he said, I was really surprised to find that at the turn of the century, most chickens only laid 45 eggs. And... Bruce's answer to that was, anybody who would tell you that would probably lie about other things, too. You could probably find chickens that laid 45 eggs, particularly if you killed them after 45 or 50 days.
I was gonna say.
But most of them did far better than that. And I think some of the authors sort of juggled the statistics to make the things that they had done look even more impressive than they really were, and they really were impressive. I mean, we suddenly had Australorps and Leghorns laying over 300 eggs a year. Now, they weren't the typical hens, but out of the better strains, quite a few of those showed up. And before that, a really good laying hen laid maybe 250, occasionally 260. A hen that laid 150 wasn't considered bad if she was used as a broody. But 45 eggs was pretty bad. And
yeah.
When I was in Indonesia in the 70s, I talked to some of the people about their chickens, and they were raising them still running in the villages, although now in Asia the broiler houses are big and the laying houses like they are here. And they reported 100, 150 eggs. And these were out of Orientals. They're not known to be great layers. And they weren't being... selected or even nurtured for high laying, and they were still getting well over 45 eggs. So,
wow.
And I used to raise jungle fowl. I like the jungle fowl a lot. It's just I used to raise everything, and I've cut down to a few things I really like, although I like the jungle fowl a lot. If you're going to a bantam or a small chicken, they're one of my favorites. And I used to get above 100 eggs out of a jungle fowl hen. And after I was done hatching, I dropped their protein down to just grain. I probably could have gotten a lot more eggs than that. It's not hard to get 100 eggs out of a pheasant hen or a common pheasant hen anyway, or a guinea fowl. So we've done some wonderful things with egg production, but we did not sort of reinvent the wheel. We took them from 150, 200, 250 to, well, in some cases, averaging 280 for the flock, 300 for the flock. And for a year's lay, that's incredible. But there were a number of things that went into it.
Well, I know the lighting thing. I do that in the wintertime, give them the 14 hours of light.
Yes.
And I noticed that really increased the egg production.
Oh, absolutely.
Not, yeah.
That's in your favor
your
right now.
Your days aren't as short as mine are in the winter.
Right. But I still go for that, you know, light timer.
The optimum is about 14 hours.
Yep, that's what I go for, is 14 hours of light.
Karen, when we talked about this show, you said you had some questions for me or something you wanted to talk about.
I did, and you know, we are running out of time.
Okay.
You know, Joe and his chickens on strike. because the question I was going to ask you is, how do you tell what kind of chicken a chicken is? And I know that's going to take more than 30 seconds worth of answer, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. But Craig's coming back. You know, coming back forever.
We have to have you back on a future show to talk about that, because I have had several chicken sightings here in the city that I wanted to share with you. And I was at a reunion last night and talked to people who like, you do a chicken show? Wait, I have things to ask you. So
very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you give me a call when you're ready, and we'll do it again. I take it this show is about over.
Yes,
it is.
And before you go, give us the address so people can join up, and
Okay.
Get the whole deal.
We'd love to have you in the SPPA. We need all the help for the old breeds we can. And we're kind of the champions of any rare chickens. The address is Chuck Everett, Dr. Charles Everett, and he's at 1057 Nick Watts, NICKWATTS Road, Lugoff, LUGOFF, South Carolina, 29078.
Excellent. And
we'll
be back with more on next show, Country Joe's Chicken Show.